Email to fullcircle at kpfa.org.
With Melody holding down the controls under the supervision of fabulous Frank, we've been your hosts, Miss M and Joy Moore. Thanks for joining us tonight on Full Circle. Stay tuned for La Onda Bajita.
You're invited to join us in commemorating Burma Human Rights Day on Saturday, March 14th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Berkeley Unitarian Fellowship Hall, 1924 Cedar at Bonita. The event includes traditional Burmese cuisine, incredible speakers, and a documentary film screening. Proceeds will benefit the Burmese American Democratic Alliance. Your support will bring attention to the imprisoned democracy activists of Burma, including Daw Aung San Suu Kyi, Nobel laureate and Burma's democracy leader, who has been under house arrest for over a decade. For more information, please call 510-485-3751 or visit us at www.badasf.org.
And it is 8:01, and you're listening to 94.1 KPFA Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB Berkeley, and online at kpfa.org. Stay tuned for La Onda.
We are the change makers, dropping conciencia and consejos like the U.S. government does soldiers. We don't just report the news, we make the news. Flipping the script on your mind as we are making changes in La Onda Bajita, dropping pearls on Pacifica Radio. This is not just KPFA, this is Radio Liberacion. We don't fake the funk, can't pull no punches, porque ya llegamos y no nos vamos. Mi gente, aquí estamos, y en esta lucha, todo lo logramos.
¡Chicano!
FM and KPFB at 89.3 FM in Berkeley, California. Yo soy Gavilán Molina, cruising to La Onda Bajita's Radio del Barrio Aslan, coming at you live from Phoenix, Arizona. This is here, aquí nosotros, with Flash Onda in the trenches, facing truth to power as we confront hate and racism with El Sheriff Arpaio. Aquí nomás estamos esta noche. And tonight we're going to take back the night. Simón, que yes. And we're asking you to open up your minds to a truly unique experience in Radiolandia, where a new citizen, a new world, where many worlds are possible. So open it up esta noche as we take it from rock to revolution, ritmo hasta la resistencia, con la voz del pueblo del sol, aquí nomás esta noche. And we got a special lineup aquí. We got a live version of Off the Chain with myself and Pedro Pepe Reyes. Y tenemos compañeros aquí, al Cervario, aquí, Play Yalo, en Linda Salina. ¿Lo dije correcto, hombre?
No, Silverio.
Ándale, compañero. Aquí estamos en The Homeboys y la Homegirls. Aquí vienen de la Bahía, ¿que no?
Sí, de la Bahía.
Vienen allí de, you're from allá, Oakland, Oaktown, West Oakland.
And Richmond.
Y tú vienes de Richmond, allá, Richmond, Norte California, es presente aquí en la casa. And we're here on site at the Tona Tierras Cultural Center, one of the magnets for the Latino indigenous communities throughout Arizona and Phoenix. And we got one of the principales, and it's great to have you both here. You know, we thought we came from Khalifas ourselves, but it's good to find that other people decided to come and join the fight here in facing this unbelievable human tragedy happening here in Arizona. Pero tonight, there's a lot of activity happening here. We had a whole day of strategic sessions and planning with all leadership across the country. Pero tell me something. Why did you both decide to come down?
I'm actually in school right now, but I decided to come down here because I think it's very important that youth stand up against hatred, racism, whenever and ever. So I'm committed, and that's why I'm down here.
Linda, I saw you today at the gathering there, the strategic sessions, and you said some very powerful stuff. Tell us, why are you here? Why did you make the trip here?
So we're part of a network/coalition called Stop the Raids Now, and that came out of young people being in adult spaces and realizing that a lot of the reform that they wanted, we felt was too moderate. At the same time, seeing that a lot of like our elders, like our veteranos, you know, like they put their bodies on the line to fight for justicia, to fight for like our rights. And as young people now, we have a responsibility to do that, right? So as young people now, we have the responsibility of radicalizing the movement. And so for us, we created a space where we've been able to bring young people from different areas of the Bay to have those conversations on how do we radicalize and try and move our movement more to the left, right? Because the more moderate we are, then the less rights we're going to be able to fight for our people.
When you're talking about the leadership now being sort of moderate, can you give us an example?
So I can talk about Richmond, right? A lot of the issues that of the adults are working on, like, I commend them, and they're working hard on the checkpoints, on getting municipal IDs. But the reality is that getting a municipal ID, they're still not going to be able to drive their cars. You know, their cars are still going to get towed. So what we need to be fighting for is driver's license, if anything. But for me, it's not about immigration reform. It's about getting rid of the border. Like, the border shouldn't exist to begin with, because every human being has a right to migrate, to survive, and to be able to feed their families. So I'm not fighting for immigration reform. Like, I'm not fighting for that. What I'm fighting for is the freedom of people to migrate, to survive, right? Because it's natural. It's natural to migrate. And what we're seeing is that people are becoming more and more conservative in criminalizing migration, when the history of our people in this land has been where we have been able to move freely.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, Linda, because, you know, there's a whole tag of immigration. And I agree with you. I mean, we as a people, we didn't immigrate here. We migrated here,
mm-hmm.
You know, in keeping with the movements of the whales that migrate every year, of the monarch butterfly, mm-hmm. The Traswells, you know, the continent. You see migration as being a natural phenomenon. Well, we're part of that natural mm-hmm. phenomenon. So when people say, well, you're immigrants, I say, no, we didn't immigrate here. We migrated here. And like you said, that's been going on for thousands of years through trade routes, through, you know, people visiting, curanderos coming back and forth, taking the knowledge, ceremony, all of that. But we are confronted with the reality, of the ugliness here in Arizona. And one thing that I learned today, it's not particular to Arizona. It's something that's happening everywhere to different degrees, except here, they've gone back 100 years. You know, chain gangs, people in shackles, the treatment of inmates, of people, their detainees. How do you react when you see that? I know for myself, I get outraged. But how, as a young person, you know, who have hopes and dreams and aspirations, when you see stuff like that, what is your immediate reaction?
You know what? I think that this incident is part of a larger, more malignant sort of sickness that is inherent to this country, to this system. People of color all over the nation are killed, are beaten, are harassed, are criminalized, are subjected to stereotypes. We see it everywhere. It's in the media. It's part of the culture of this country. And this is one symptom of a larger problem. Not too long ago in Oakland, we had a young man shot by the BART police, caught on tape. It was straight up right there in your face. This is, and even we could even extend it worldwide. If we take a look at the situation of people of color who actually make up the majority of this, of the population of this world, and we look at the conditions they live in, it's not right. People are living in horrible conditions, and I think this is part of a larger sort of problem.
Well, you know, what I've seen interesting is in other countries, let's say a year and a half ago, France was having tremendous problems as a country. You know, a young person was shot and killed by police, and the whole country eventually rioted. I mean, unions, teachers, everybody. Here, people get killed, and you might have a little reaction, but not on that level. We need to get it to that level. But looking at it in particular, Richmond and the East Bay, you know, where there has been efforts to organize day laborers. And when I look at, you know, when I go to Richmond in those areas, especially where Richmond, I believe, meets San Pablo, near the BART facility, there's hundreds sometimes of day laborers out there with nobody. You know, I've never seen anybody trying to assist them. And when I look at that group, a lot of them I know are not 18 years old. I know they're not in their 20s. You know, these are like young kids. I mean, do you see that? And if you do, what is your reaction to that? I mean, where is the outcry for child protective services? Where is, you know, help for these kids? These aren't adults, you know, who are in their 20s or 30s. These are young kids traveled, you know, 3,000 miles to get here, you know, with no parents, no support, no community, nothing. I mean, as a young person, how do you feel about that?
It just shows the reality of our communities and how invisible we are, right? They don't want to deal with this. So either they ignore us or they attack us. And I feel like, especially in Richmond, San Pablo, because they're by the Home Depot, right? We don't have a, like, day labor center. And actually, we just started a new group in Richmond called Masewali, which is a youth grassroots Chicana organizing group. And that's one of the things that one of the young people in our group talked about is, like, how can we get a day labor center here in Richmond, San Pablo area? And we just started officially since October. And it's a group of about 15 young people between the ages of 11 and 19. And they're so eloquent and, like, they understand, like, the situation. And it's beautiful to see, like, how inspirational they are and intelligent they are. And so for us, like, we're definitely seeing that. And, like, as young people, we see that need of taking care of our day laborers, because in San Francisco, they have a day labor center. In Oakland, they have a day labor center. In Hayward, they have a day labor center. So why is it that when it comes to Richmond and San Pablo, we don't have one? So,
you know, I also wanted to ask you, what about the youth? There's a lot of shootings going on also in Richmond, not just by police, but also youth on youth and people on color and, you know, people on color on color. And so what? How do you feel about that? What would you say to the youth out there that's killing each other over a rag as well?
I actually had a situation where I got hit up by some youth who were trying to claim colors and trying to come at one of the young people that I was walking with. And I feel like a lot of times what ends up happening is, like, a lot of the young people who live in Richmond have never even gone to San Francisco. They don't know how to ride the BART. So a lot of times we're fighting for crumbs, and that's what ends up happening. We're always fighting for these blocks, trying to get, like, our respect, because we don't realize that, you know, what they're giving us is crumbs, you know? And I feel like a lot of times if, as young people, we start realizing the fact that what the others have and what people deprived from us, right? And I feel like we're not focused in realizing that instead of fighting each other, like, we need to be fighting the enemy, you know, like, we need to be fighting against the capitalistic notions of, like, keeping our people down. Because, like, the reason that they're fighting each other is because they need respect, right? And they don't get that respect from adults. Like, adults don't respect young people, so they need to find it in other places. And so they have to fight for that respect between each other without realizing that they're fighting the wrong person.
Well, they should be fighting the system that keeps them in that cycle of poverty and violence. We're going to take a little music break here, and then we're going to return with some closing remarks here from Silverio. And Linda, and then we're going to be talking to el compañero here, José, from Peace and Dignity. Pedro.
Es tiempo que se escuche su voz. Han sido años y años de vivir en la sombra. Han sido años y años de explotación. Porque es tan difícil que comprendan, entiendan lo que pedimos. Porque es tan difícil que valoren y ignoren nuestra labor. Será la diferencia. Pueblo, únete. Pueblo, únete. Unidos haremos camino. Que no sea en vano la sangre que nuestros hermanos derramaron en los campos de batalla. Ellos lucharon para lograr nuestra libertad. Hoy nuestra mejor y única arma es la educación. Solo así podemos soñar, soñar, soñar en un mañana mejor.
Linda, tomorrow is a big day. There's been a calling out across the country. I know that Rage Against the Machines lead singer Zach LaRoche is going to be, you know, in town here to help lead the march and bring some attention. As young people and knowing his music, what do you hope tomorrow? What message do you hope to bring to the public and to the people here in Arizona?
Rage Against the Machine was actually a very sort of influential band in my life. It actually was the band that radicalized me, and I think it goes to show the power of music. It's a weapon. It's a weapon that we as the sort of the one who, you know, we don't have the same resources that the government has, right, or the system, but we have music, we have culture, we have art, and it's very powerful, and I hope that with Zach on board on this, I hope, you know, we show the nation that something is wrong here, something is definitely wrong here, and that it just doesn't happen here, right? It happens all over the country, and I hope that what's put out there is that something's wrong, and that people are not gonna just wait around and stand idle, that people care, and that we're gonna make the effort to stop this and move forward.
Linda, any closing?
I just know one thing. I know that there's multiple bands, especially in the Bay Area, in California, that are very political, and I feel like that is one of like the outlets that young people have in sort of like getting out their anger, and one of the ways that I feel like Zach's music and like Rage Against the Machine is puts into words a lot of like our feelings and a lot of our thoughts, and it's a good way of like educating ourselves and like other young people.
Well, any message out there for young people tomorrow, for tomorrow's evento?
Come out.
Come out.
Come out.
Come out strong.
Come out strong.
Come out strong. Not just tomorrow, but the next day, the day after, the day after that, the day after that, the year after that, and just keep going.
Well, it doesn't stop here, and hopefully everybody, like ourselves, will be returning back to Northern California and wherever parts of the country people have come from and start organizing aggressively. Because as it was pointed out today, the problem isn't unique to Arizona, except here it's gotten out of control, and we need to reel it back. Pues otra vez, muchísimas gracias, compañeros, for joining us here at La Onda with myself and Pedro. Pedro?
Yes, that's right, Gavilan. You know, also just to let you know, you were mentioning earlier how, you know, when it comes down to raza and our struggles, it's like the last thing on the agenda, so to speak, of the progressive movement. And we really need to move that up on the agenda because of the fact that these are human beings. They're not just animals. You know, they're not just another species of plants that are dying. These are actual human beings that are dying every day, that are being deported every day, that are being tortured every day, that are being imprisoned every day, and that are being used as slaves every day. And so it's not something unusual that happens every day. So we really need to get stepping out into the streets more and more for those folks that can't really be there for themselves because of the fact that we got sheriffs like Joe, our pile here.
Well, tomorrow will be a time when we gather and rage. Muchísimas gracias. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And, that's right. And we also have another guest who's going to be joining us.
We got Jose Maldivo, who's been a longtime organizer for the Peace and Dignity Journeys. And at a time, you know, Jose, when our people are under assault, there's so much violence, so much hate. You know, we're not even taken into account. The president comes to Arizona and doesn't even take one bit of, you know, concern to what's happening, the plight here of our people. Pero you yourself, Jose, have been involved in the spiritual movement, let's say, of Aslan, of the people. And when we see not, you know, so much violence, not only by police, the INS and ICE, but also, as you said, Pedro, you know, brown against brown, black on brown, all that violence, you know, it's time to go back to the tierra. Tell us a little bit about your work, Jose, especially around peace and dignity. And I know now you moved back to Arizona from California.
Yeah.
Recent development. Yes. We're going to miss you up there, but I know you're going to keep yourself active. And you're now working out of here, Tonatierra.
Yeah, I've been, I guess, part of Tonatierra before I left to Arizona, to California, and then I came back after we finished the peace and dignity journeys. But the first thing that pops to mind is there's the spiritual journey of the run. It's about, you know, rooting ourselves in our cultures and building off of there. But the thing that popped into my mind that reminds me of why we're here in this moment in history, it takes me to a place in Chiapas called Actial, where about 10, 11 years ago, there was a big massacre. And this past October, we ran to Actial, and we were reminded about the massacres that happened there by the military against the people there, the indigenous people. We met with the elder there. But they also put a cross that they made a cross for every person that was killed. And we have it with us. It's part of the bundle. So we have one of those original crosses. And the reason I bring that up is because here in Arizona, there's a lot of people that have a short-term memory. There's a big fervor by, I guess you can say, the right or the movement that's with our payo. And they're really here, you know, trying to be patriotic and say that, you know, everything, this is American, claim American this, American that. But, you know, in the 1980s, when Reagan was in office, you know, Reagan declared war on the working class. You know, I come from a small mining town about 100 some miles down south called Ajo, and the National Guard came and attacked the Union. We were literally invaded. And this happened, you know, all over like Arizona, what they call the Copper Belt. So we have people back then that were also trying to stand up for way of life, stand up for, you know, people were as patriotic as or whatever, you know, they have those belief systems. But a lot of those things changed when we got invaded. You know, got a different point, a different way of being conscious of how the reality within the U.S. and Arizona is. So the irony is that we have people, you know, 20-some years later, you know, blaming people for crossing the border where it was, you know, the same companies and corporations that declared war on the working class, and then around the time of NAFTA started going to other countries. And the reason it goes back to Actial is because in Mexico, with the NAFTA, a lot of people's communal land systems were taken away. They were open up
for companies to take over. So then that's why people migrate. That's why people are coming. That's why people now are having to cross the desert and a lot of times die. So the thing about it is people are very short-sighted in the reality. You know, they want to, you know, wave the flag, but there's also responsibilities. Like, where were these people that are standing up and saying that they're patriotic and American and blah blah blah? You know, where were they 20 some years ago when all these people, you know, all over the country were trying to maintain a way of life? To me, like, they're too late, and people have to understand the reality now. And so, you know, this is like what's happening now in Arizona. It's a battle over here. It's a battle where, you know, that people, I'm glad people are finally standing up, because in Arizona, there's a lot of fear. And it's not just people that don't have the documents. You know, it's people are a lot of fear because Arizona is a very radical right. There's militias or all those kinds of people here. It's like, it's like the Wild Wild West. But tomorrow, they're going to see something different.
You know, I'm really glad you're talking about the before, because earlier today when I was out at the workshops, I actually got to hear some of the commentary that had been happening with some of the experiences of the raids that took place. There was a couple who were Yaqui Indian, Native Americans from here, Sonora, and basically what happened was that their house got raided, and they were looking for some guy who didn't even live there, you know what I'm saying, using this as an excuse to enter their home and raid their home just because they look Mexicano or just because they look like raza. You know, they went into their house and scared their whole family and basically threatened them to come back and kick their door down and never paid for their door, just left their door however it was, and insulted their family as much as they could, but not realizing that they're the original owners of this area, of this space, of this time, you know. And so it was really great to hear the Yaqui language as well, and to be able to be reminded that there are our ancestors who were here before us, mm-hmm. and them.
Well, yeah, like I'm from Ajo, and my people are from both sides of the border. I'm Chicano, I'm Yaqui, and I'm also Tonawatam, and our land is on both sides of the border. It was became part of Mexico and the U.S. Became part of Mexico first and then the U.S. in the Gadsden Purchase after the 1848 Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo with the U.S.-Mexico War. But the thing about it is here in Arizona, people are saying the argument often is on legal and illegal, but people are hiding racism behind it, because a lot of these debates, a lot of this movement, it's a lot of anger on both sides. So people are masking their racism, you know, can't say 100%, but there's a good part, because that's how it is here in Arizona. So they're masking it between legal and illegal. And that's one of the things that's important to also point out. And I really hope that folks here, like, there's a lot of people in the middle. There's people on both extremes trying to, you know, prove their points. But I hope there's a large majority of people in the middle that will wake up based on tomorrow when they see people marching, people protesting and asserting, you know, what's right and what's wrong. Like right here, what's happening now, we're on the right side of history, and down the road that's gonna be known. You know, like back in the days, it was a civil rights movement, you know, and there was people against each other, and history showed who was right and who was wrong, and we're on the right side of history here again today.
Well, let me just ask you one last thing, Jose. You know, you do a lot of stuff around, you know, Donatierra here, the cultural center. But tell us a little bit about the Peace and Dignity journey. I know that's going to be coming up, and just to give people a heads up here.
Yeah, the Peace and Dignity journeys, it's done every 4 years where we conduct a ceremonial run throughout North Central and South, the South. People say America, but we say Aviala. So I just got back a few weeks ago. I drove back from Panama. We ran beginning May 1st from Alaska, and another group started in mid-April. And for 7 months, we ran from community to community to community, from country to country to country, until we got to the Panama Canal. And the purpose of this route is we're using prophecy, or we're following prophecy that now we're living in the time of the reunification of the eagle and the condor. The eagle of the north, the condor of the south. The eagle represents the indigenous nations of north, and the condor represents the people of the south, and the Quetzal from Central America. So we're working to weave all these people, all of our peoples together, and it's a ceremony. It's a ceremonial run, and it's, again, now we're coming out of a new into a new era. We're leaving the time of Shitontekisa, which is a time of darkness, and we're coming to a new era when they say the time of the new sun, the rising sun, and that's part of the run. It reflects that run, and eagle and condor, this prophecy comes from south, the south, from many of the nations of South America and Central America. When we're in Tikal, October 12th, the Mayans, there was a maestro, he had a big ceremony where thousands of people were there. And the abuelo there who was running ceremonies, you know, the Quetzal is the one that's going to bring the people together. So part of this is we're going to these communities and it's unfolding. You know, running and going to these communities and these ceremonies, people are adding a little bit more. So it's kind of building everything back in together, this tapestry. And that's part of, like when Cuauhtémoc talked about the last Latuani of the Mexica, that you're going to go into a time of darkness, take everything underground, all our knowledge, you know, and because one day we'll be back to fulfill our destiny. And that's what's happening, because there's also many nations out there that have very similar messages, and we're living in that time.
And it's countdown, 4 years, 2012. Ahí viene. Well, you know, one of the things that I found about the peace and dignity is that walls, barriers, fences can't stop the run.
Oh.
No pueden parar la corrida.
No.
Pues mira, José, muchísimas gracias. Y Linda y Cervaro aquí para acompañarnos esta noche. And we hope to have you all back to share information.
So where can they get more information on Peace and Dignity if they want to get involved or actually run themselves?
Well, we have a website, but right now it's down because, you know, peace. One thing that's important to talk about Peace and Dignity Journeys, it's a grassroots movement. It's by the people. It's for the people. So they can give me a ring or they can look on the website. It's www.peaceanddignityjourneys.com. And there's also the MySpace thing and a few Facebooks. But if they want to get a hold of me, it's 415-377-2502, 415-377-2502. On October 23rd to 26th, we're going to have a meeting for all of Mexico and Morelia, Michoacán. So we're going to bring all the people from Mexico together to continue the preparation for this 2012 run.
Muchísimas gracias. Thank you so much. And now we're going to take it back to Mr. Tuch, and we'll be back after a musical break.
Yeah. Después llegó el subcomandante, que devuelva lo robado, que entregue luego lo equipo, todas las tierras robadas y también el dinerito. Porque no permitiremos ya más trampa en felicitos. Porque no permitiremos ya más trampa en felicitos.
Vamos, yo soy el Gavilán Molina. I'm here with Pedro Pepe Reyes, El Falcón, and the Flash Onda crew. And we're coming at you live from Phoenix, Arizona, here in the desert land, sunshine. Lots of sun aquí, mucho sol, pero it is still very a sense of darkness and ugliness. When we have the evil Howdy Doody, you know, Lone Ranger.
Cold hearts out there.
John Wayne, excuse me, is that John the Payne McCain? No, it's Joe
Arpia. Arpio
here.
Al payaso.
El payaso, al payaso. No, he's been compared to the KKK. You know, he's been compared to, as a matter of fact, he bragged about it November the 12th, 2007 with... what is that, uptight bigot, excuse me, Joel Dobbs, I think, from television.
Lou,
lo mismo que no.
Lou.
No, pero la cosa está que, you know, some real claims here, and this is the quote. They did me, I think it's an honor, when Lou Dobbs told him, well, you know, they call you KKK. He was honored. And this is the kind of stuff we have here in Arizona, and it's the kind of stuff that the rest of the country needs to be alarmed about. You know, we've always had the saying for years, you know, after World War II, you know, first they came for the Jews, then they came for the neighbor, then they came for the other neighbor, and never said nothing. And then one day, they came for you, and it was too late. Well, they're coming. They've been coming for our people. You know, they have our people in shackles and in chains.
That's right.
You know, they're humiliating, using mental abuse and torture. I mean, all those things. Pero, I think one thing, Pedro, and it's one thing that I'm glad both Sara Uribe is here along with Davin Cárdenas. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about some of this. I mean, because one thing that I saw here that was really encouraging is we saw young people involved with this movement. You know, and when you look at the whole ladder of, you know, economic ladder, when you look at the whole structure of labor in this country, the lowest, los de abajo, are the jornaleros. You know, they're the lowest at the, you know, of the ladder of labor and of the economy. But, and here you have the most vulnerable group, the one with no protections, no rights, no anything, yet are leading this fight. You know, and so I say to myself, where's the progressive left? Where's all those liberals? Where's all those, you know, animal rights activists that will fight to and scream and yell because you're mistreating chickens, okay? You know, or you're mistreating dogs. I mean, there was a furor last year. You saw it all over the place. You know, dog killings, the, you know, abuse of dogs. I mean, all these groups. Well, how come they don't scream and yell and protest on the treatment of children that are abandoned, you know, after their mothers or parents are taken away? You know, what about the countless deaths? We have no idea how many people have died in the detention centers. We do know that the sheriff here and his department here in Phoenix has paid millions upon millions on, you know, lawsuits and wrongful deaths, you know, actions. Mm-hmm. But as young people, it was refreshing, you know, I was talking to Pedro and Falcón, to see young people involved here. And you yourselves represent, you know, not only the present, but the future. How do you, you know, feel about this particular situation here? And what is your message to the rest of the country, especially to, you know, the radicals and progressives? You know, back in Califas, I was getting it on with some groups that consider themselves radical and revolutionaries, you know, when it's convenient, when it's right next door, when it's down the street. But when you have to take the battle to these fronts, they're not here. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you say to them?
I mean, for me, nothing's new. You know, I think studying like 10 minutes of history or whatever, like Sheriff Joe Arpaio and so forth, what we're seeing is like, it's just like a present day incarnation of things we've already seen. So like, nothing surprises me anymore. I think this gives us a historical reference for what we've seen in the history of the United States. You know, this history was founded on exact like state terrorism, like what's going down right now with Arpaio and Maricopa County. It's nothing too new to us. So if we kind of look back, I mean, I think a lot of people act surprised, and I mean, I think some of the things he's doing is surprising, but if we think back historically, it's not that surprising. Like, if you could study 10 minutes of history, you know, I mean, we act like we don't come from the country that produced, you know, J. Edgar Hoover or the Iraq War, or the Vietnam War, and the invasion of almost all Latin American countries. You know, we act like we don't come from that country, but we do. You know, the United States of America has always produced Sheriff Joe Arpaios throughout our history, you know, so this is very common. It's a common thread, you know. But at the same time, I mean, if we let it go as it is, we are letting history perpetrate itself on us, impose itself on us like it's always been. But those who take the stand against, those are the ones, we are the ones who are trying to rewrite our own history, not let it be imposed upon us. So I think, like, it's very important that we respect and give shout-outs to the people who are standing up, because we kind of, I think, understand a little bit more of that historical context by which this is all taking place right now.
And you know, Gavrilan, Devin actually comes down from Santa Rosa, man. So he's out there in Califa Island, you know, and he came all the way to Arizona to make a point to be here and represent for the raza, you know. So big ups,
Devin. Like they say, an injury to one is an injury to all, you know. And the brothers at Masawali Worker Center here in Phoenix were taking a hit, and they've been taking hits, and all the people. So it was good that they called on the mobilization. The National Day Labor Organizing Network, SADAI, was pushing that and promoting that and been organized around that. And so we're real good, happy to be here.
Well, Sada, you know, I saw a lot of young women becoming active in leadership, and the type of leadership is really grounded, you know, within the workers. You know, do you see more women becoming empowered within the movement of day laborers? You know, because I know there's domestic workers, you know, and there's colectivas of mujeres, of women. Mm-hmm. Do you see more, you know, you see yourself become more active with that? And how do you reach out to, you know, a young woman, let's say, who's here, who didn't get an education in Mexico or in Sudamerica or Central America, and is coming here basically illiterate, looking for work? Do you see that? And how, what do you do to bring that person in and make him conscious to not getting abused, to not ending up in, you know, jobs where they're literally chained to their jobs? You know, slavery, there's a lot of that happening. You know, we're beginning to see that, where people are brought here and they have nobody to go to, nobody to run to. What do you do when you see women in that situation?
Right. So I think it's important to note that there are also women day laborers. There are corners in the United States that are just made up of women. Corners that have been there for the last 50 years, actually. So so day laborers are not just men. And I think this movement has definitely given a space for young women, women of color, to create leadership, to push things forward. And about women who come to this country looking for work, I definitely feel like as women, we are placed in a vulnerable situation. A lot of the women day laborers experience harassment, sexual abuse by people who try to hire them to clean a house, and things don't turn out that way. So day labor organizers definitely have their work cut out for them to do education around that. You know, as day laborers, we might feel very vulnerable, but we have rights, and a lot of the work of day laborers, the people like Davin across the country, the National Day Labor and Organizing Network, is informing people, you know, you come to this country, but there's a constitution, there are human rights, people don't check their rights just because they cross the border.
So you're basically saying that not everybody knows about the law that was proposed here, which was 218G?
287G.
So I didn't even know the right number, so I'm learning still, right? So does everybody know about 287G, or do you think not everybody really knows about these laws that are affecting them?
Yeah, so we really want to make 287G a household term, you know? 287G is this law that allows local police to act as federal immigration agents. So fundamentally, there's something messed up with that, right? The immigration is federal law. So the fact that you're having local and state law officials enforce federal immigration law is taking them from the job of actually protecting communities. And in fact, what we've seen is that people are really afraid to cooperate with police. People are afraid to report crimes. And they become easy targets because they know that they won't speak out.
Can I just say, I think that's another contradiction in like the conservative argument of always wanting state rights and local rights and self-determination and so forth. But bring the feds in, you know, when it comes to these illegal aliens that are terrorizing our communities. You know, it's another on the long list of contradictions in the Republican repertoire, you know.
What was all of that? You know, but the interesting thing, too, is that, you know, there's unofficial estimates that there's up to 30,000 women in detention centers, you know, in the Southwest, you know, from here, you know, all the way across to, you know, to Florida. And if that's the case, you know, what is happening to these women? You know, and some of these women have children, have families. I mean, it's almost as if the whole detention thing has been taken away from the prison system and creating another apparatus where independent private companies can come in and start warehousing in tents, not warehousing, but in tent cities, putting people in those situations. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back here and talk a little bit about more about this. But now we're going to send it back to the mothership and Mr. Chuch out there in Basurclas, Alta Califas.
Thoroughly, peacefully, just between you and me. I never heard another branch on my family tree. My capital P-E-O-P-L-E. Living for the days we can run the planes freely. But instead, hey yo, here's a dope CD that retells the story of my people. Yeah, my people. Yes, my people. Yeah. Now if you see a stampede, then you know it's us. It's the brown buffalo known to kick up. When you see one of us, you will feel all of us. Run with the pack and we feel the rush.
Now if you see a stampede, then you know it's us. It's the brown buffalo known to kick up. And if you see one of us, you gon' feel all of us. So run with the pack and y'all feel the rush.
My hens and my people, they broke my mama's back and called her illegal. My people, brown people, beautiful. Elbow grease and dirt up under your cuticle. We rhyme for those with bent spines, picking the grapes that turn into wine, planting the seeds and pulling all the weeds like the Jungle Brothers. We the beads on a string, we the breed of buffalo with them spiritual wings. Cause some things ain't just what they seem. My thumb is green, but my team is brown. Got a smile on my soul, though I seem to frown. I'm proud cause the people of the town put it down. Que viva los Black Panthers. Gangsters and chavistas with the answers. Zapata vive, vive la lucha. Now if you see a stampede, then you know it's us. It's the brown buffalo known to kick up. When you see one of us, you will feel all of us. But with the pack, you will feel the rush.
Órale, back again aquí. We're coming at you live from Phoenix, Arizona. Órale. And joining us at the table is going to be... Compañero. Siéntate, hombre. Join us here. B, pues bienvenido, Holmes. Out of Chicago, the Windy City.
That's right.
Órale, bienvenido, compañero. Welcome here to La Onda Bajita, Radio Barrio Slans, live broadcast here from Tona Tierra's Cultural Center here in downtown Phoenix, Arizas. Pues, compañero, you heard the talk we were having here, aquí entre los compas. And out there in Chicago, you know, I mean, you know, people think it's a long distance, but yet you have one of the largest Latino populations, you know, in United States, you know, outside of, areas like, you know, Los Angeles and Nueva York. You know, I think it's Chicago, you know, in
no
that
doubt,
kind of line.
No doubt.
Do you see anything different there in Chicago than, let's say, you know, situations happen here? Because one thing that we were talking about, what's happening here in Arizona is happening everywhere, except it's gotten out of control here. You know, there hasn't been the kind of proper checks and balances and you know, oversight. this is why it's gotten out of control. But do you see similar situations there with ICE, with the INS? I mean, sometimes people think, you know, that the further you are away from the border, you know, less of a problem you're going to have. What do you say to that, you know, to that kind of thinking?
I mean, I think with the lack of federal immigration reform, we've seen a really discombobulated array of local enforcement strategies that's led to pockets in the country that are safer or more dangerous for immigrants and targeted populations. Chicago has been one of the more progressive cities. Harold Washington, the first black mayor of Chicago in the 80s, passed the sanctuary law that many cities did back then. And more recently, we've been able to expand that in the suburbs of Chicago. But at the same time, as we see migrants, one, being pushed out of the cities through gentrification, and two, landing in the suburbs as their direct point of contact, we're seeing these human rights crises build in places where there's not an established community and where there's not established infrastructure and organizations. So Waukegan, Illinois is one of the suburbs outside Chicago that has its own 287G as well. And Cook County Jail, which is the largest jail in the country, collaborates with ICE on a daily basis inside a sanctuary city.
That was going to be my question. That was going to be my question, too, if the sanctuary city was in effect or if it was effective in keeping out ICE or immigration, collaborating with local authorities. Is it effective or is it kind of symbolic?
I mean, I think there's a definite effect knowing that you can go to your city police officer and not be talking to an ICE agent. Obviously, if you end up in a county jail, that's outside of the city's jurisdiction, outside of their terrain, so it becomes a different scenario. But I think it's more than symbolic. In Cicero, where we just passed it, 10 years ago when they were under a mafia mayor out there, you had ICE and the police riding in a car together, pulling people over, and the cop would say, "Show me your license." And when they didn't have a license, they'd say, "Okay, you can either pay us $300 or I'm going to have you talk to my friend in the passenger seat," right? Mm-hmm. So making sure that that type of policy, that type of phenomenon is put to an end is some level of security for folks, whether if you end up in the county jail, again, it's a different story.
You know, but a lot of times, you know, we've seen cities, you know, that have given, you know, sanctuary kind of, you know, cloud. And yet, in reality, it's just, you know, symbolic gesture, you know, for political purpose. You know, election year, they're trying to get votes. They're trying to get the Latino vote. And we turn that vote out. And then, you know, when it comes time to get those protections or that kind of, you know, coverage, it's gone. I mean, we saw that, you know, in San Francisco with, you know, the mayor Newsom there, who was, you know, all gung-ho and ready when he was running for, you know, election, you know, for the sanctuary movement. Once he became, you know, the mayor, you know, it went out the window. So what can people do this weekend, today, you know, strategy session, planning? And one thing that was very, very clear is that at the end of this weekend, people need to go back to their communities and organize like we've never have organized.
That's right.
How is that going to be done? How are we going to expand the bases that we already have, the apparatuses of organizations, you know, to battle, you know, racism, to battle the hate? What else are people going to be able to do?
We're going to walk tomorrow. We got our walking shoes on. We're ready to go. We were doing stretches. We were doing yoga earlier today. We're getting ready to walk on Phoenix tomorrow. See what happens, you know. See what happens, because there's definitely going to be aggressors out there as well. But it should be good to bring the solidarity of the people together.
We're going to do teach-ins, too. Massive teach-ins. You know, people need to take this to their schools, to their churches, to their community groups, and start talking about what's going on in Arizona, because a lot of people don't know. So that's definitely a really big part of the strategy.
Well, you know, the thing that I did see today, though, is I saw a real good cross-cultural representation here that normally you don't see. I mean, normally you don't see, you know, when you talk day laborers, when you talk about, you know, immigrant labor, you don't see the kind of diversity. And here you saw it, which was a real positive sign. But I know out there in the world, you know, we still need to reach out, you know, to other groups. You know, we need to reach out to the African-American community. We need to reach out to the Middle Eastern community. We need to reach out to the Asian community. You know, those communities, you know, which could really, you know, strengthen and solidify. Because right now, I think for the most part, we've been trying to organize the workers, the laborers. But at this point, this is something that affects the whole country, not just a particular group. You know, I had people tell me, oh, you know, it's a Mexican thing. I had people tell me, oh, you know, Mexico, it's not that important. Mexico doesn't sell, you know. And I mean, those kinds of attitudes, as if, you know, being the second largest non-Anglo group in the United States, you know, isn't significant. But other progressive groups, you know, I hope that what we saw here today will carry over into our communities, where we see, you know, white progressives, you know, white radicals, you know, we see, you know, African American activists, you know, we see Asian, you know, people working for justice, you know, involved in this movement, because it's a movement that it isn't just a Mexican thing, it's a human rights thing, you know. So I think that's something that, that maybe we can all work towards and bring that sort of, you know, education through teach-ins. But, you know, but tomorrow, I think, you know, there's a platform tomorrow, you know, from Chicago, you know, from San Francisco, you know, to L.A. and across the country. And for you, Bea, I want to ask you, you know, what message are you bringing, you know, from, you know, Chicago to the rest of the country?
I mean, I think to follow up on your last question as well, we have to acknowledge that we're in a very unique political moment. Our country is at a crossroads where the people in the United States, in the middle class, in the upper working class, at all levels, is feeling the economic crisis that the rest of the world has suffered under for the last couple centuries, right? And when people are in crisis, they respond to that in several different ways. The easiest way is to just put your head down and try to get by, right? The other way is you try to get over. You start to scam people. You figure out how to get yours in the most easiest but potentially deceitful way. The most complicated way, which is the job of organizers, is to convince people that our job is to get together, right? And so as this country is dealing with paycheck to paycheck, facing their mortgages going under, losing their jobs, this country has a decision to make. And we're in a moment where we're seeing the ugliest strategy possible, the Sheriff Arpaios, the Minutemen of the world, that are trying to make sure that they keep their peace by excluding and standing on the necks of others. And we're also in a unique political moment where, even if it's just rhetoric, we have an administration that's calling for social movements. This is the first time in at least 30 years we have an administration in the White House that's saying we need social movements and isn't just hostile to them. Whether that's rhetoric or not is going to be something that we as organizers need to prove by building that movement and putting that rhetoric to the test.
Absolutely. Pues, compañeros, I'd like to wrap this up and thank you for joining us here on La Onda. Sari and Davin for being part of this broadcast, coming at you live from Phoenix, Arizas, land of sunshine, full of hate and racism, and we're here to push it back. We're here to expose it, and we're here hopefully to open people's conscience that everyone has to stand up. You know, all directions and all corners need to come together. This is the battleground, and we're coming at you live from ground zero. Orale. And now we're going to send it back to Mr. Chuch out there at the mothership in Basurclas, Norte Califas. Orale.
Andrea Lewis here, letting you know about Tavis Smiley speaking. That's right, television personality and righteous political commentator Tavis Smiley will be at First Congregational Church of Oakland on Tuesday evening, March 10th at 6:30 p.m. He'll discuss his new book, Accountable, Making America as Good as Its Promise, and I'll be there with him and hope you will be too. The church is located at 2501 Harrison Street at 27th in Oakland. There's free parking and wheelchair access. Tickets for the KPFA benefit, co-sponsored by United Healthcare, are $15 at the door and only $12 online at kpfa.org or at supporting bookstores. Visit kpfa.org for more information on Tavis Smiley.
It is 9 o'clock, and you're listening to 94.1 KPFA Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno. I hope they turned on their transmitter to us because we're giving the information and online at kpfa.org. A quick reminder, listen up on Tuesday nights to Raza Crónicas from 7 to 9 o'clock. That's 7 to 8 o'clock. Listen to Crónicas de la Raza. You're listening to a live broadcast out there from Phoenix, Arizona. Yo soy Ventura, Mr. Chuch. And now back to Phoenix, Arizona.
Can you hear me, compadre? Órale. Yo soy Miguel Gavilán Molina coming at you live here with Pedro Pepe Reyes. I've got El Falcón in the house, and we've got the Flash on the crew ready to jump and go and bounce y todo. Pero for right now, you're listening to Loma Bajita's Radio del Barrio Aslan. We've been coming at you live here from Phoenix. We're actually at Dona Tierra's Cultural Center. It's 9 o'clock, top of the hour. And it's a real pleasure, and for me, a privilege and honor to be here with a compañero that I haven't seen in years, but whose work we have always supported. He's been he's devoted his life to the whole land struggle and bringing justice to indigenous nations within Anahuac, within Las Americas. And that is Tupac Enrique. Bienvenido, compañero.
Buenas noches. It's very nice to be with you all this evening and all the listeners. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias por estar aquí con nosotros. We also have a compañero here, Shannon River, from the Otondam Nation here on the frontera. Welcome, compañero.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me.
For being with us. You know, these are times of crisis, times of war, times of uncertainty as we see our people being profiled, being marked, being rounded up, being hunted down, and with no regards by the U.S. Authorities and officials on, you know, sovereignty, you know, sovereign nations that are part of the borderlands, you know, of the United States and Mexico. But in these times, as hard as things are, we know that hundreds of people died last year, as they've done for the last 15, 20 years, ever since Clinton started instigating the whole gatekeeper during his reign, and then that became militarized with both, by George II. Bringing military and, you know, personnel and military armament onto the border of U.S.-Mexico. But with all of that happening, there still needs to be some kind of peace amongst the gente, some kind of healing, some kind of renewal. And I know, Tupac, you've devoted your life to bringing that sort of like message to the peoples. I know you're working on something right now, and I'm looking at it here, Indigenous Peoples Day Community Celebration in Affirmation of the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which was adapted in September 2007. There is an activity coming up here on March the 14th. Next month. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What is that event and the gathering of the visions?
Sure. We'll make an effort to make that description be recalled, and we will recall ourselves that it's the sixth year that we have had this Nicantraka Ilhuit, as we say in our language, Chicano, Azteca, Nahuatl, referring to the commemoration of the beginning of the year according to our own calendar. And when we speak about power, it's good also to live with the power that the Creator has bestowed upon us, and it's within us. It is also good to recognize that we can never surrender that power. We can never allow that power to be surrendered or to be intimidated by efforts of so-called sheriffs of authority. But really, what is the power that they have? Is that really authority that they say that they possess, or is it a masquerade of something that comes to represent a lie when you look at it in terms of all sense of analysis and evaluation? We're speaking about the conditions that we have endured here in the territory of the Autumn Nations. It's known as Phoenix. It's called Arizona, but we know it is territories of Autumn Nations to this day. We know for a fact that none of the nations in the territory at that time in 1848, talking about militarization, we were talking at that time about outright war, similar to what is being imposed upon us now. But at that time, 1848, we're speaking about war, not just the reports of war. And we're talking about military incursions and actions of conquest attempted in the territory that resulted in a treaty between these two republics of the United States of America and the United Mexican States, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. Yet, ask yourself this, we could send out a search party at this moment and you would not find it. I don't believe you would find it. We have not encountered it. One of these times we were facing off with these gentlemen, they call themselves minute, the minute men, some kind of dimension that they have in their mind, but it's very minute. And they present themselves to us and they said, we told them, one of our elders was saying, you stole the land, this land was stolen. And the gentleman, well, I say gentleman, but I would be giving them the benefit of the doubt, but he was very minute still. And he says, no, we didn't steal it, we bought it. And then we said, well, show us the receipt. And then we have to make this point. None of the indigenous nations of the confederacies that exist in this territory, and you must remember, we must recall, you're speaking about recalling, this is a confederacy of peace, our confederacies. We know so much about the empires of the world that have been taught in the history and it's a curriculum of the civilized mind. All the empires of the world are researched and educated, but the confederacies of peace that still exist and which are represented when we invoke the principle of the Confederacy of Aztlan, it's not a nation, it's a confederacy of the nations, of the territory, of the land, and the people who live with the land. None of these nations at that time in 1848, going from the Hopis to the Pit River, to where did they give the authority to Santa Ana to negotiate for their territorial rights or human rights? To pass that over to Washington, D.C. And unless that answer can be proved and documented and show it to me in the affirmative to the parameters of a legal system, show it to me. Then we can start talking about legalities, and then we can actually engage in a debate, a discussion on immigration. Because unless we go back to October the 12th, 1492, we're not debating immigration. The issue is being manipulated to either control or distort the actual trajectory of the European colonization of this hemisphere and paint it as if we're dealing with immigration reform where it isn't really comprehensive to the point where it was truly comprehensive. We would have to go back to October the 12th, 1492, and then begin the debate there and the dialogue there about this immigration issue, immigration into the continent and the indigenous peoples of this continent being on one or the other side of these borders, not only this one, but all of these borders in this hemisphere that we call the Ariayala. And this is what the point I was making. Yes, we suffer the antics and the activities that are atrocious and tragic by this sheriff that is called Arpaio of the County Maricopa. But last October the 12th, I had the fortune to be in Colombia. And we're talking, there's 10,000 people blockading the Pan-American Highway in opposition to the free trade, to the trade agreement between Colombia and the United States, the bilateral. And as severe as we have the situation here yet in Colombia, we're talking about assassinations, we're talking about disappearances, we're talking about tortures, we're talking about the highest rate of labor union organizers being assassinated in Colombia to try to push these trade agreements between the economic interests of crime. We were there just a few months ago with those relatives. And the reason why we bring it up because we have to bring these things into the context of our movement, no? And this in this sense, it is a movement that is continental and global. And for this reason, 6 years ago, but this is one of the reasons why 6 years ago, we understood that we needed to deliver and live up to the principles of our own context, of our own making according to our culture and our spirituality. And so for that reason, we projected in accord with the beginning of the new year, according to our systems of counting of days, months, and years, and so forth, which is known as the Azteca, we began to project the Nicantlaca Ilwit as a correlation of our community activities, and this happens every year now. the first years that we proclaimed it as Indigenous Peoples Day, and we had proclamations by the city. We've had subsequent proclamations by the tribal authorities of the Council of the Salt River Territories, and just recently Shannon Rivers here, who's from the Hanawatam people of Hill River, they passed a resolution at the council level from Hill River, the Hill River community. And so what we have done by these activities is project our self-determination in terms of our history by understanding that we're part of the Confederacy of the Indigenous Nations of this continent, Ayayala, and the time where we would refer to ourselves as the people of the Americas, that time is gone. If that is the reality that has existed, now that we have the declaration in place, we can move to another level. And in that level, self-definition is a principle of self-determination that we have to take forward.
We're going to leave it right there for a little bit, take a music break, and then we're going to come back and talk about that Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. But I also want to talk to Shannon here, River, about his people and the proclamation and what that means. So we'll take a little break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the proclamation in conjunction with the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Mr. Chooch.
We need an antidote and a cure. Cause do you really think Muhammad got a problem with your own war? We don't know war. Imagine if every prophet was alive and current days amongst you and I. You think they would view life like you and I do? Or would they sit and contemplate on why do we live this way? Act and behave this way? We still living primitive today. Cause a piece of the destination in war can't be the way. There's no way. So people just be a woman, be a man. Realize that you can change the world by changing yourself. And understand that we all just the same. So when I count to three, let's change.
Grand philosophy, I'll barely keep my head above the tide. I got this mortgage, got three kids in school. What you see is the truth, but really troubles me inside. I'd change the world if I could change my mind, if I could live beyond my fears. Exchanging unity for all my insecurity. Exchanging laughter for my tears.
That's what it's about, one for all and all for one. That is the way. And yo soy Gavilán Molina, coming at you live here from Phoenix, Arizas. Aquí, and I'm here with Pedro Pepe Reyes and Falcón. We're La Onda cruising here with Flashpoints, coming at you live. I'm here. We're very pleased to have Tupac Enrique, along with Shannon Rivers here from the, I want to pronounce it correctly, Otoham Nations.
Otom.
Otom Nations. Well, bienvenido, compañero. Welcome to the show here. And Tupac mentioned that your peoples had passed a proclamation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, thank you, and good evening. Welcome to our country. This is the indigenous peoples of the Akhmer Otom people. We have existed here for thousands and thousands of years. Our people lived along the Gila River and the Salt River, and they have fished, hunted and gathered and moved all along this territory, this land. And when we talk about the history of America, it goes way beyond 1492. It goes way beyond the coming of our white brother and our Spaniard European brother, and even our African brothers who were brought here under some dire conditions. So we talk about indigenous peoples and the stance as it pertains to the immigration movement. We were talking, Tupac and I have known each other for a long time through ceremonial. We are ceremonial brothers more than anything. And that ties us with a blood that is thicker than anything else. So recently, Tupac and I have traveled across not only this country, but to other parts of the world in Central and South America. We were able to attend a summit in Guatemala, in Iximchi, a beautiful, beautiful place of the indigenous peoples there, Mayan people. And it's wonderful to see the movements of the South take hold of their traditions and their culture, and they believe that the way they live is the correct way to live, not someone else's way to live. My people are the Oatham people, and basically Oatham means a person, a human being. That's who you are, that's who we are, the two-legged. Recently, the government or the tribal level adopted, passed a resolution passed a resolution ratifying the declaration, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, affirming their commitment and their connections to the articles that are written in the declaration themselves. One of the specific articles that we talk about is Article 36, and I'm going to read that to you real briefly, because it specifically talks about border issues. And it says, indigenous peoples, in particular those divided by international borders, have the right to maintain and develop contacts, relations, and cooperations, including activities of spiritual, cultural, political, economic, and social purposes with their own members as well as other peoples across borders. And basically what that means is we as indigenous peoples never recognized man-made borders. These borders were brought on, as Tupac had mentioned, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, the relationship between the United States governments and the Mexican government. As indigenous peoples, and in the North in Canada, we've never recognized those borders. We always had free trade, and you had mentioned it, that their trade routes existed for thousands of years. If you look at the trade routes that come up through Mexico, through this territory, and on up to the north, they've been in existence for many, many generations, and our people have always lived in that that mindset, in that relationship to the earth and to understanding our relatives. So when our tribe, the Oatham people, the Gila River Indian community, adopted that, it was brought on by our lieutenant governor at the time, Jennifer Allison Ray, who supported me in the work that we do here in the indigenous communities. We are a small grassroots organization. And what you see here is, this is not a job, this is our way of living. This is our passion. We believe that the rights of indigenous people are stronger than any other laws that are out there. We believe that in order to be truly who you are, that you should live in the ways of the traditional people, that our ancestors fought for a reason. They knew that these terrible times were coming. They always have come. These arpaios are not new to us. These movements and these hatreds that you see, they're not new to us. They've been here since the beginning of that 1492. They were here. And so whatever you may hear in the communities out there about, well, you know, what are indigenous communities doing dealing with this, quote, Mexican issue, this immigration issue, it is indigenous issue. It is an issue about movement of people, and the people have the right to freely move on territories that are originally owned by indigenous peoples. So that's one of the reasons that we're here to support and to help out Tupac and Tonatiera and all the people that are here. So we'll be there tomorrow too.
We're speaking of, excuse me, Gavilan, we're speaking about the march tomorrow, which is a national march of people from all over the country here in attendance to attend the march tomorrow in protest of the actions and the activities of Sheriff Joe Arpaio of the County Maricopa. But at the same time, Shannon mentioned that we attended the Third Continental Indigenous Summit of Abya-Yala in Guatemala, I think it was 2007. And there was a statement made at that Continental Summit of Indigenous Nations and Organizations and Pueblos. And the statement went something like this. It said, it didn't matter, no less cual sea quien sea, whoever it is, whoever it may be, one of the children or the relatives of the nations of the indigenous peoples of Abya-Yala, this continent, what line they may stand on either side of any of these lines that have been put on this continent by the government states in the hemisphere. But the indigenous peoples, we can never be immigrants in our own hemisphere. It doesn't matter what part of it we're standing on. We may be pilgrimages. We may be even just visiting relatives in other parts of the continent or conducting ceremonial or even trade activities. But we're never immigrants no matter where we are. And we could be from any part, from north to south of this entirety of the Abya-Yala under our confederacy, traditional and contemporary, of the eagle and the condor. We are the original jurisdictions of authority. But that authority, once again, it comes from our cultural principles that we live up to. To the point that we live up to those obligations, then our rights are invoked. The conversation on rights always begins with our initiative, which is at a spiritual level, to fulfill our obligations to our ancestral precepts and cultural mandates. And as we move in that direction, we'll meet obstacles. If it's Joe Arpaio, we'll meet them face on. If it's the United States government, we'll meet them face on. If it's the OAS, we'll meet them face on. If it's the whole international legal system, we'll meet them face on. We're not concerned about the size or scale of the armaments that they think they may have possessed in terms of instruments of weapons, because we know that the power of the people, the power of the earth, the power of creation is with us and we are with it. And for that reason, we always say that the sheriff who thinks that he may be an authority, but he really is only authority he has his power that we have surrendered to him, or that the people have surrendered to him. And the time has come to take that authority back and bring it back to the hands of the people. As they say, it was intended to be that way, I understand, of the people, by the people, for the peoples. So that's the point we're at. Once again, we have a conversation between the indigenous nations of Abya-Yala and the societies of the rest of the continent, whether it's U.S., Mexico, Guatemala, you name it. And that definition is being redefined. The primary point of reference at this time, of course, is the situation in Bolivia with what's happening with our brother Evo Morales and the relationship between the indigenous nations of that part of Tahuantinsuyo and the government state of Bolivia. There's a nexus there that is a critical and strategic element of our plan as we move forward, not only to regenerate our rights, the respect for our rights as indigenous peoples, but also to fulfill our obligations to preserve our relationship with the Mother Earth and the natural world.
Well, we were seeing some of that affirmation happening here this weekend, which is a very positive sign, I think, for everybody. But let me ask you, as we wrap up our conversation here, and I hope we can come back and continue these talks, but there is something that you're doing on March, Saturday, March the 14th. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The event on Saturday, March 14th, is the Indigenous Peoples Day, which it's being hosted this year at the Indian School Park. It's a park here in Phoenix, which used to be a boarding school operation. Atrocities, tragedies, and unnamed crimes that people, just as common knowledge, know to have occurred there. But it all occurred under the process of using education as a weapon of war to fulfill the conquest and established the domain of manifest destiny of the European American Anglo brother in this part of the continent. No? On the 14th of March, which correlates again in time to the sequence of days that initiate our calendar as Aztecas, the new year. We're going to be stepping forward as indigenous peoples, nations, from throughout the area of what is known as Phoenix in Arizona. Federally recognized, non-federally recognized indigenous peoples will be standing together, and we're going to send out a message of affirmation to the meeting taking place at Window Rock, Arizona, at the same time, which is the North American Regional Preparatory Meeting for the next session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. That UN forum, the permanent forum, is going to happen in May. From Phoenix, the Indian school, the grassroots community, in this case it's really Roots Grass community, are going to be sending a message to the preparatory meeting in Winter Rock for channeling there to the UN permanent forum on indigenous issues and the world society as a whole in affirmation of this United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Now, we know, and I'm sure the listeners of your station are probably familiar, that the U.S. government, even to this point with the Obama administration, has yet to sign on to the declaration. And we're saying that this is going to happen. We're not waiting for Obama to sign it. The community is affirming it, and we're sending that message globally through our activities on March 14th, Indigenous Peoples Day, here for the 6th annual celebration of our self-determination from the grassroots perspective to the global.
Tupac, if people are interested in becoming involved or taking part in that, how can they reach you?
The best way is probably through the Tona Tierra website, which is www.tonatierra.org, T-O-N-A-T-I-E-R-R-A. And you'll see some links on there towards the past celebrations of Indigenous Peoples Day and clues to where things are unfolding this year. We do have a website in development for the event, so that's probably the best place to go.
Okay, and is there a phone number where people can reach you?
The phone number is 602, that's area code 602-254-5230, which is the number here at the Nahuacali. And the Nahuacali is where we're broadcasting from here today, which is a liberated zone, a territory in the middle of downtown Phoenix, but it's a liberated territory. We have established this facility not only as a community center, but also under the principles of the Confederacy of the Eagle and the Condor. It exists, and we exercise our reality here as an embassy of indigenous peoples.
West Tupac and Shannon, do you have a last closing remarks you'd like to send out there to the people?
You know, I'm glad to see a lot of people out here having fun, but you know, many, many times there have been movements and protests and marches, but it's time for an evolution of change. We have to educate our education. We have to educate what we know about who we are. We need to identify ourselves correctly, who we are. We need to understand that, as I mentioned earlier, that these arpaios are going to come and go. And the movement stays strong because the people believe in what our ancestors have taught us. They believe that what the way we live is right, it is correct. It is a movement that the fire will never die, and it never has. They attempted to wipe out our indigenous peoples here all along this Turtle Island, North, Central, South America. They tried to wipe us out, and they killed millions of us. There, you hear all the time about Jewish Holocaust, but you never hear about the indigenous Holocaust in these countries, that these Americas, you don't hear that. Millions and millions upon millions of indigenous people died. There's a record that says that there maybe was about 125 million indigenous communities here, 125 million indigenous peoples in North America and Canada alone. In parts of Mexico, right now there's 2.5 million, roughly, in North America alone. Where did those millions of them go? And why is there no museum for that? Why is there no talk about that? And why is there no mention of those things in the history book? Because the truth is fear, and it scares those that are in power. And it controls even our own people. And our own people need to get up and understand that what has happened to us is an atrocity. And we stand up for the rights of indigenous peoples together, and we should. Thank you.
Tupac.
I just want to close with, China mentioned that we attended the Third Continental Summit in Guatemala in 2007. The fourth summit is being planned now for Puno, Peru at the end of May of this year. And there's a message that we're in conversation with now, but we want to take it to the Continental Summit of Avayala in Puno, from Avayala North. And in this case, clarifying geographically, Avayala North, as Shannon just mentioned, includes what is known as Mexico. In terms of continent, even though people tend to want to look at the border and use that as the divisor, for us indigenous peoples, it's only something we must contend with, but we should never give our loyalties to those European frameworks. So at the present point, the Obama administration has made statements about renegotiating NAFTA. And we are taking the conversation to the meeting in Window Rock and to the next session of the Permanent Forum. No renegotiation without the declaration. And on this point, all of Avayala North, we are moving to a point of consolidation as the political and economic position to take forward in unity and unified voice to the next summit in Peru, at the continental level of indigenous nations organizations, that all of our indigenous nations and organizations and communities, Mexico, Canada, United States, stand united in taking the position that unless the declaration is ratified and affirmed and steps take to implement it, any negotiation on NAFTA is dead in its tracks because it's going to be blocked by the indigenous peoples working together across and in spite of these boundaries between Canada, the United States, and Mexico as Avayala North. So we're also talking about an organizational framework of the immediate work that lies ahead of us throughout the northern part of this continent, Avayala.
An ongoing work, and you know, it's something that we have to take to the next levels. But for right now, I want to thank you, Tupac, and I want to thank you, Shannon, for joining us here with La Onda, broadcasting live from Tonatierra here. It's
Gracias.
A real honor and a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you.
Thank
pues miren, compañeros, tomorrow we will be there, and, you know, we'll take the voices of the people to the steps of the Palace of Power of Wells Fargo, where the sheriff is hiding. We're going to take it there, and we will be back here. Muchas gracias, compañero. Thank you so much for being with us.
Igualmente.
And now we're going to send it back to Mr. Chuch to wrap up the last half hour at the mothership. And this is El Gavilán Molina here with Pedro Reyes. I also want to thank Pedro, you know, for making these broadcasts possible. You know, not only La Ondas, but also Flashpoints, along with Falcon, who has been here making all this Comanche possible. And for Pedro, it's for us, we're very grateful because literally Pedro walked here as a little boy from El Salvador when the United States was destroying his country. You know, and the Mayan peoples there from El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Central America. Once again, we'd like to say gracias. We will be taking it to the streets tomorrow, and we will be marching, we will be protesting, and we will be reporting. We are MPR Radio Comunitario. Órale.
They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you sun, catch all the hell. They don't have so very long for their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Well, and me.
You out there. It's all about paz in the streets. Yo soy Chuch, and we're gonna cruise and bring you the best. Cubo to my brother, my carnal, el loco neto, orale. To the veteranos de Windsor.
I'm 18.
I'm a goodie too. I'll
And it would hurt, hurt to know if you ever were untrue. Sweeter than the taste of a cherry so sweet. And I'm so proud, girl.
I'm so proud.
I'm so proud of you. Compliments to you.
Baby, my angel baby.
your dedica. Go ahead with your dedica.
Le dedico a una muchachona que anda por aquí en Windsor, man.
Okay, what's her name?
Oh, man, se llama Isa, man. I'll tell you the truth. Se llama Isa. A ver si me está escuchando.
You really love her, huh?
Pues, you know, things go up, things go down.
Well, I wish you the best luck ever.
Thanks, man.
Orale. Thank you for calling.
Orale. Hey, can I get a shout out?
Go ahead.
To the mechistas up in Windsor, up in Santa Rosa, man. To todos los revolucionarios, man. De corazón, man, para la gente.
Well, thank you very much for calling. Checking in all the way from Windsor Town. That's my hometown. That's where I grew up. That's where the first lowrider movement ever happened. And it was Los Brown Angels and many other clubs that was happening around Sonoma County, bringing the best rolitas and the reminders of what's up. Go ahead with your dedication. Go ahead. Well, thank you for calling, and thank you for reporting. Thank you very much. Right here, KPFA, La Onda Bajita, every Friday night. you new weather, cruising and bringing you the best rolitas after rolitas. Give to the Windsor town. Let me tell you, if you like to listen to that kind of music, check us out every Friday nights from 9:30 to 10 o'clock, because that's what I'm focused on right now, is playing those Feed Me Rolitas after Rolita. But before I leave, I want to say happy birthday to a very special lady in my life, my madrecita, Esther Brondos Longoria. Tomorrow's her birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. And that's coming out from your son, Mr. Chooch. From Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, where the sheriff is trying to play God? Let me tell you, it is time to be informed and you listen to La Onda Bajita. Next week, we have program in Español, nothing but in Spanish. So, you know, get your thinking hats ready, like my comp always says, in Español. So, yo soy Ventura, Mr. Jude, saying buenas noches. And a quick reminder, listen up Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock as we bring you Crónicas de la Raza with Nina and the Colectiva de la Raza Crónicas. Yo soy Ventura saying buenas noches and thank you for everybody that listened and called in. Buenas noches.
For National Nutrition Month, the Berkeley Farmers Markets will have free recipes, free samples, and free cooking demonstrations on March 10th and 31st by Hunia Bradley, Christine Manu, Life Hedendahl, and Joy Moore, who has often graced the KPFA airwaves. And free compost on March 28th. Phone 510-548-3333. Again, that's 510-548-3333. Or go to www.ecologycenter.org. The Berkeley Farmers Markets are an ongoing benefit for the Ecology Center.
Peace, this is Paris, and you're in tune to my man Ricky Vincent, the Uhuru Maggot, every Friday night on 94.1 FM, KPFA.
Bringing you back what you're missing here.